All right, my dear students, today is Lag BaOmer, and I'm happy to say in my neighborhood at least the bonfires were last night, not Saturday night, which was very good. It avoided all Chilul Shabbos. Today is the 15th of May. The year is 2017, believe it or not. I think in terms of 1917, but time has moved on. I also want to mention that Rabbi Harry Scherer, a lot of people informed me he died this year. And you can go online, you can get the funeral, you can get everything. He died this year. I believe he was over 100 years old. His wife Ruth, children, grandchildren, Kanayin Hara, Wifel Yiddishkeit Beisich Nisht. But I do know he left in his will to leave money to some Chabad center that was very kind to him towards the end of his life, so you have to give Chabad credit. And I also believe that their grandchildren who became Balei Tshuva from Harry. So it should.
Brother Moshe, right?
Yeah, we spoke of him last week. This is exactly who we're talking about. So, Baruch Hashem. Life marches on, and we have what to be thankful for. Let me just see if there's anything else I have to respond to outside of the lecture. Yeah, there's a very interesting recording that surfaced in the Yiva website. They had a radio program many decades ago in Yiddish, and 1 week they had Rabban Lichtenstein speak beautiful Yiddish about yeshiva in America. Very fascinating, and I'll quote it again later in the lecture. But if anyone's interested, you have to go to the Yivo website and you'll be able to find Which Way for Traditional Jewish Learning in America, recorded in 1968. It's a few minutes, about 7-8 minutes, Rabaron Lichtenstein. Okay.
Have you ever given a class in Yiddish?
No. Why, you were already in the 60s, Yiddish was not a language that was accessible to the students. Everything had changed. And the person who changed, I'm an eyewitness, I'm sitting right there, Danny Greer. So Danny Greer is in the news now, and I tell you, I'm suffering. I hope there's no truth to it. Maybe if there's a lawyer sitting in front of me, they can explain to me. It's a civil suit, and yet he wanted to plead the Fifth Amendment. Now, I don't know. To my simple mind, if someone wants to plead the Fifth Amendment, it's not a good sign. Am I right or wrong? It's a sign that you're guilty, but you don't want to be self-incriminating. It's Ein Adam Meisimet Atzmo Rasha. It's a Gemara. Rabbi Lam wrote about this. It was quoted in the Supreme Court in America. But I don't know. I hope it's not true. Danny Greer, all right, a character he was, but he was a decent, upright, committed Jew in the full sense of the word. All right, let's come back to Yeshiva City when Danny Greer and I were still in the United States. I was in the United States. He was still a big shot in the New York area, if you recall. And 1966 was a critical moment. That incident with Rabbi Belkin had a lot of outflow. It was not a simple matter. Part of it, I want to say what I didn't say last week, or a drop further. Number one, I had the gut feeling at the time that I was one of the Rosh Yeshiva, but I don't want to overstate the case. The fact that Rothkopf had an opinion, Einu Malav, Einu Morid, I was a kid at the time. But I had the gut feeling that my elder, revered colleagues, Bal Kochi Anu Amen, it wasn't that they came freely to the dinner, it wasn't that they agreed with Rabbi Belkin. There was a feeling that this was a bad mistake. But YUPR, when you have a problem like that, they try to do some desperate action to save the situation, and they were able to have this dinner where the picture was more important than the food you ate at the dinner. Reb Mendel Zaks, Reb Yaakov Moshe Kayin Lessin, Reb David Lifshitz, all sitting with Rabbi Belkin, Moreinu Verinu Rav Soloveitchik, and giving him Yashikayach. And it shows you so many years later my gut feeling was correct, and you have, I mean, that's archival evidence of the highest order that Rabbi Shurin, on the article that was published in Morgen Journal, writes in his own handwriting, Rav David Lifshitz, Chishet HaKol, V'Harash Yeshiva, Lo Hiskin L'Gamrei Lo. I also had another feeling, and I state this, if perhaps one day there'll be a historian who will stand on the shoulders of a guy named Aaron Rothkopf. I stood on Gil Clapperman's shoulders. He did the doctorate 1886, 1950. I did 1950, 1940. I hope someone will do a decent doctorate, a real scholarly work. What happened in the yeshiva afterwards? And I want to say something where I believe I'm correct and can be very important in understanding what went on in 1970 and 1980 and goes on to a certain degree until today. When we came to the yeshiva, and many of us studied in YU, but even if you didn't study in YU, you studied in a different yeshiva, all your rabbeim inevitably were Yudapeyesh Rabbanim. Right? In America, who's worthy to be a Rosh Yeshiva? Which American kid, if a kid could learn a Daf Gemara, it was a miracle. But who knew Shasim Pachim? By the 1960s, you start to see American-born Rosh Yeshiva. Yours truly, one of them. I was appointed to the faculty 62. And America is now producing Lamdanim of Hakim. I'm not boasting, but I can tell you honestly, I had Rebbeim who couldn't paskin a shaila. They were totally ruined by, I told you many times, by Reb Chaim, time and again I would hear from my Rebbeim, Veis nisht alein vitz a paskin. I don't have a paskin. I can handle a shaila better, all right? And then I'm an American-born kid. We grew up, we achieved. I need not tell you, today the entire yeshiva faculty is basically American-born. There are no longer any Shanghai survivors on the faculty. These rebbeim, the American-born, were more extreme than the Europeisha. The Europeisha were overwhelmed by America, couldn't conquer America. The attitude in the yeshiva was, Minzayin Samich on Dr. Belkin, Rav Shmuel Belkin. He can handle America, he handles the yeshiva, he raises the funds. Remember, the Rav stood behind Belkin. There was never a machloikit between them until early 1970s. And that machloikit was a result of the Americanization of the faculty. If we have time, we'll talk about it, but not today. These Rosh Yeshiva, the Americans already, they didn't stand in awe in America. They grew up in America. They had opinions. And to a certain degree, this will explain why the atmosphere and why you, until today, is more right-wing than it was previously. And 66... you could already feel it in the air. Reb Mendel Zags, it's Dr. Belkin's Rebbe from Rotten. They had no choice. Reb David Lifshitz, the Rav is there. But there was a critique. And this critique breaks into the open very shortly after this dinner. And here you come to a very interesting chapter which deserves to be explored. It's worthy of an article, worthy of a master's thesis. It's not a doctorate. Worthy of a master's thesis. By the late 60s, Rabbi Belkin is aged, not in years, but in deportment, demeanor, health. The man carried a tremendous burden. Rabbi Revel carried a tremendous burden. I always told my students, Rabbi Lamb is much firmer. Do you know why? Belkin and Revel both became presidents at the age of 31, 32. They were youngsters. Rabbi Lin was a mature individual. Mature individual, when you're in your early 50s, late 40s, whatever his age was, you can handle the situation better. You have more life experience. Rabbis Revel and Belkin were overwhelmed by the responsibility, and they both suffered health-wise and died relatively young. So Rabbi Belkin, who was a loner, you have to understand his personality. I'd like to talk with it, but not now. I want to finish up for Rav Hutna. Rabbi Belkin was a loner. He was not the gregarious, outgoing person. He was totally involved. Yeshiva and Belkin were one. They were like Siamese twins. Now he needed help. And the question was, who could they appoint the first time ever vice president or assistant to the president? They had various titles, assistant, then it became vice president. And it was a fabulous choice. Rabbi Israel Mafshewitz. Recognize the name? Rabbi Israel Mafshewitz. Dr. Belkin knew him from the day he came to YU. It reads in 1928-1929. Knew him from the day basically he arrived in America, arrived at the yeshiva. Rabbi Israel Mafshewitz was one of the top talmidim in Yeshiva Hochanan. He married the youngest daughter of the Mechita Eloi, Libby Mafshewitz, Libby Palachek, the Yichis, unbelievable. Terrific individual, tall, good looking. Learned, didn't become a Gadol Hador, got involved in the rabbinate. Tremendous shtela, Hillcrest, bordering in Hollywood. Utopia Parkway, I believe it's a Union Turnpike. Utopia Parkway goes this way, Union Turnpike continues. There's a shul there, one block long. You have to see it to see what I'm describing. That was once a prime area. It's still a very good area today. I can't say it's prime anymore. Queens is, you know, it's not the Jewish stronghold it was in the 50s, 60s, into the 70s, 80s. It's a different story today. But a prime area, but it was a conservadox temple. There was no mechitza. No mechitza. Many temples were like that. Conservadox, everything else, orthodox. Women didn't have aliyah. I still remember I was in Cherry Hill, and we go back many years, and this balabuster was ranting and raving against the, he was telling the rabbi that I don't want a temple where women are called to the Torah. With misogynist, his hatred for women was obvious, his concept of what women are all about. You know, I also don't want a temple where women are, but for different reasons. But I could see, and that poor rabbi was orthodox, you know, but he was fighting a tremendous battle on the board of trustees there. It was already everyone talking about, you know, we have to be equal, men and women. Egalitarianism. Well, Rabbi Belkin could, and he was a tremendous fundraiser. And this was an area, Hollywood, Jamaica Estates, think what I'm telling you, there was money to be had for the yeshiva. And this was a man, you know, in the prime of life, political connections, everything you would want. But you couldn't appoint a vice president after 66. The young generation was so against shaking hands with anything that had to do with conservative Judaism. Until today, people are angry at me that I've spoken so positively about Professor Shaul Lieberman. I've seen Rashi Yeshiva. The steam comes out of their mouth. American born. I look at them, I said, you know what it means? His first wife, the Minska Gadol's granddaughter, died. She was, I understand, pregnant and died. They didn't have money for a doctor. I don't criticize. All right, I would not take a position that was conservative, but I don't want to criticize him. I understand him. I know what the man went through. The seminary gave him a chance to teach a few hours a week and the rest of the week. Closed the door to the library and produced Tosefta Kapshuta. I'm not here to justify him, but I will not criticize him. Poverty is poverty. And I've been through life. I know what it's like where you have to pinch every lira. You don't know what it was like here after the Yom Kippur War. I had two full jobs. I didn't have money for food the fourth Shabbat of the month. I didn't live big. I didn't have money for food. But I used to go to Machon Gold, Son of Chama Leiber, which would say, whenever you go, tell me I'm walking over, because she lived nearby. So my daughters grew up with the Chama, and I couldn't eat a thing. Why couldn't I eat? She was always bothering me. Mama Rav Alzata, Shemata Mama Rav Soloveitcher. She was so, what a woman. You don't know what a, if I tell you among my greatest privileges in life, one of them was certainly to have been an intimate friend, teacher, colleague with Nechama Leibovitch. You don't know what Gottlieb is, what greatness is, until you knew Nechama Leibovitch. So, you see, there was fallout. Mafshewitz, they were ready to appoint them. I remember this like yesterday. Researched the papers at the time, researched the commentator. The outcry, the younger Rosh Yeshiva already. Rabbi Belkin couldn't get away with it. And ultimately, he turned to Rabbi Rachman. And then there was a lot of frustration. Rabbi,
was it that Rachman was kosher?
Rachman had an Orthodox shul. What was the problem?
But he had ideas that were...
At that point, to say that there was opposition to him, but it was low-key. You have to understand that Rabbi Rachman, with his ideas, was still within, not without. It's a big difference. And Rabbi Rachman, when all was said and done, was a princely individual, widely respected. Again, there was much more. But the shul was Orthodox. Sharei Tefillah, Far Rockaway, Lawrence. Shul was Orthodox, 100%. Fifth Avenue Synagogue. Couldn't fault Rabbi Rachman. And he became, but not Mafshewitz. So you see, there was fallout. Okay, so that's very important, just following up last week's shiur. Then I want to go further, and I want to deal with Vic Snow, and you have to remember this is the nephew of Rabbi Israel Snow, who is one of the, when I was growing up as a kid, Rabbi Israel Snow, it was a word, you know, everyone stood in awe, one of the American born, studied in Europe in the biggest yeshiva, Talmud Chacham Mufak. You're not dealing with a lightweight. And suddenly he's out of Chaim Berlin. So Vic said, you know, in describing all that went on and coming down to the Pasha, which I want to hit again with Rav Shlomo Kalbach, I was too kind. And Vic was right. I was too kind. And I was too kind purposely. And I'll tell you what my dilemma is. I have very strong opinions. I've seen a lot in my life, but I never want to be overly critical of other points of view, because when push comes to shove, none of us have total success. I've given Shayur explaining the Haredi world, the Agudat Yisrael world, people are upset with me, though you explain as if you're an Agudist. All right, it's true, but I understand what their problems are, I understand where they're coming from. And there's so much negativism today, I'd rather be as positive as I can. Of course, my opinions come across, but I never want to be accused of bashing non-religious Zionists. I understand them. I understand what their questions are, their problems. I want to be positive with my point of view, why everyone should follow in the Rav's footsteps. But still, one has to be diffident and respectful. But let me review and say a few thoughts. And everything is in the public domain, so there's no halachic problem here. Look, people are people. Those of you who have studied psychology, many people who run an institution develop the attitude, it's me, I know how to do it, no one else has to do it. Some of these people become like a Hasidic Rebbe. If you picture a Hasidic court, let's take Ger, let's take Bells. Can you picture some subdivision in Ger, someone opened up another shtibble? Yeah, I'm a Ger Hasid, but I'm a bigger London than the Rebbe. And you can come to my shul too, it's Ger. I'm a sideshow in Ger. It'll never happen. Could you picture in Bells what went on with Bells and his cousin, the Belz Munkatan, a big title Rebbe, he's in B'nai Brak. They didn't talk to each other for decades. Now, they, in their old age, there's a peaceful arrangement between them. But there are people that think like this. I'm the achiever, I have it right. They can't tolerate anyone else cutting in to their fame. There's no question that as Rabbi Huttner took over Chaim Berlin, and he went from being a Rebbe in the high school, and he went to becoming the Pachad Yitzchak, over the years, he could not tolerate anyone receiving a claim who was not his Talmud. And you saw this, it's well known in Chaim Berlin, students who didn't have that positive reaction to the Rosh Yeshiva when he became / Rosh Yeshiva / Hasidic Rebbe, they moved on. Ultimately, over the years, Rav Shirkin, he had to leave. Rav Snow had to leave. Rebbe Aaron Soloveitchik, with all his awe for Rav Huttner, felt uncomfortable already with the criticism of his older brother, Moreno Rabbeinu, my Rebbe Muvhak. And one by one by one, you see that who remained the leading lights in Chaim Berlin, it was the most devoted Talmidim of Rav Huttner. And this is personality. This shows you the greatness of Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University being a communal institution, you can have many lights there. Students have ample choice. People just asked me, very important people, they said, we were together Shabbat a few weeks ago, and they asked me about Rav Tzvi, Rav Heschel Shechter. And they want to, is he the Rosh Yeshiva? I said, no. But he's first among equals, you follow? But on the other hand, students can relate. Rav Heschel, Rabbi Rosenzweig, Rabbi Willig, Rabbi Kahn, Rabbi Reichman, so many different personalities. Rabbi Weinberger, the Mashpia, Rabbi Weinberg, the one of the Mashkichim, also fabulous personality. Rabbi Tzvi Rum, who's here now. Wow, endless personalities. You don't have that in a yeshiva where there is a Rosh Yeshiva, who is the dominant figure. And as certain people filled a certain niche, the Rosh Yeshiva, there was no tolerance for them. You're cutting in to the basic message. And there's no question that this was part of Rav Huttner's personality. Is it good or bad? No, as a Yeshiva University person, to me it's not my cup of tea. But to someone who was steeped in Satmar, Ger, Belz, Ruzhin, look, so we have Baruch Hashem, the first Litvish Rosh Yeshiva, who became / Siddiq Rebbe as well. Now, with this in mind, and as you said, political, it's all politics. Politics are part of life. There's no doubt about it. Politics are part of life. But in certain yeshiva, it's much more pronounced. If I go back in history, you give me an example that proves Rakefet's thesis 100%. Not 90, 100.
Even in
Washington? Go back into the United States. Teir v'das. No? How is Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yisrael Meir, known as Chafetz Chaim Yeshiva today? How was it formed? What happened? Rav David Leibovich was a Slabodka, Nick, came over from Europe, was appointed to be a Rebbe in Teir v'das. But he was a Baal Musa, Slabodka. And he started not just giving Shayurim, but giving Musa talks. Mr. Mendelovich was not happy with it. He was the Mashkiach of the yeshiva. Musa was his domain. Reb David Leibowitz felt ill at ease, packed his bags, and organized another yeshiva, which ultimately, remember, Reb Yisrael Meir HaKohen, everyone calls it Chafetz Chaim. What you don't know is that after World War II, when Reb Menachem Mendel Zaks was saved by Yeshiva University, they brought him to America, they saved his life. So he sued the yeshiva in Queens. I believe it was in Forest Hills at the time, but you can check out, again, it's an interesting story from master's thesis. He sued that he has the right to the name Chafetz Chaim, so, because he organized the yeshiva on the west side. So the Beit Din gave an interesting decision that Taka Reb Mendel Zaks has the right, that's his father, his wife is the Chafetz Chaim's youngest child. I knew his wife, I mean, imagine, I knew the Chafetz Chaim's daughter. So he has the right to Chafetz Chaim. The yeshiva that he organizes is called Yeshivat Chafetz Chaim. But the one in Queens took the name. They have to use Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yisrael Meir HaKohen. Today, as the years moved on, Chafetz Chaim remains an elementary yeshiva, and the one in Queens is a major institution. So everyone calls it Chafetz Chaim. You're not going to take them to a lawsuit. But you see, these are some of the problems in human existence. This is how Chafetz Chaim began. You talk about shuls, Young Israel. 99% of Young Israels began because a balabas didn't get mafter on his father's yard site. So he walked down the street and said, heck with those guys, I'm organizing a new shul. And there are always going to be malcontents. You can't satisfy everyone. You only have a limited number of aliyot. In Ohel Rivka, we have no hasafet. It's part of the takanon of Ohel Rivka. No hasafet whatsoever. Tircha de tzibura. No, people are upset. They're going to block. That is a very fascinating point. And I'll say something else, and this Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein alludes to. And it's also very interesting. I don't know if Rabbi Aaron, I can even understand it better by the hindsight of today. It's the 2017. It's not, what did I say, 1968 was the interview with Rabbi Aaron. You see, Rav Chutna did something that no other Rosh Yeshiva achieved. And here you have to, it's a deep thought. It's not simple. It's not a, understand the depth of what I'm saying. Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, to him, Yeshiva University was a yeshiva just like the Lashon. He said it many times. He had no interest in changing the content of the yeshiva, the curriculum of the yeshiva, the method of the yeshiva. If you open up Rakefet's book in second volume, Rakefet translates the Rav word by word from the Yiddish into the English. He boasted time and again, Zal yeshiva vi ichab de kent in meine mishpacha in Velazhin in Brisk. It's a yeshiva like the one I knew from my family. Velazhin Brisk. Ichab tamidim. Was haben gekannt sein von den größten Lamdonim, ob sie haben gelernt in the Lashon. I have students who would have been the biggest Lamdonim had they learned in the Lashon. I think the Rebbe, I think he's overstating the case. Forgive me, okay? But he's a Rebbe. I also boast about my Talmidim. I understand him. But he didn't want to change. America, you need college. College is college, yeshiva is yeshiva. Two separate worlds. Most of the other yeshivot were content, RJJ, Teir Vadas, to continue Europe in American context. But they didn't want to change the heart. Rabbi Chutna changed. He developed the Pachad Yitzchak. He became the Pachad Yitzchak. His whole Musar approach was different. He cut down the hours of the traditional Musar Sfarim. He felt that the Pachad Yitzchak, that was more than emotion, but intellectual, that would catch on in America. And you have to give Rav Chutna all the credit. He created, on the American soil, a new concept, call it Agada, merged with Musa, merged with Lamdas, merged with philosophy. And this was the Pachad Yitzchak. No one else, that's uniquely American. The Rav remained the Rosh Yeshiva. Well, reverse it. The Rav Shayurim could have been said in the Lashon and Brisk. You can't say that about Rav Hutner. And the Rav criticized him. Malacha Bagada, Tlach Eitzel Halacha, what are you doing? What are you doing? It's a different world. And Rav Hutner over the years minimized his, instead of giving a halachic shir, he wound up that the most important shirm he gave were the Maimarim, which later become the Pachat Yitzchak. So you see, he was a unique individual who forged a certain new approach that you didn't have. Not in Slabodka, not in Merkaz Harav, where he was nurtured, Merkaz, Slabodka, not in Voloshin, not in Brisk. Pachat Yitzchak was a gift on the American soil. But his personality was such, like a Rebbe. I'm the Rebbe. I'm the individual. Bishvili nivra ha'olam. You can put it that way. That was the Pachat Yitzchak. And you saw her over the years. Either you shaped up or you shipped out. That was, Chaim Blin was famous for that. The Talmidim who loved him was like a chassid to a Rebbe. Drash Yeshiva, Drash Yeshiva, Drash Yeshiva. We guys in YU, we could be critical of the Rav. We could be critical of the Rav. I hate to say it. Rebbe, you know, we'd open our mouths. And I remember we had a student, don't want to mention his name, maybe Yitzchak remembers what I'm speaking about. Guy got up when we was after Shir with the synagogue council, with everything going on. This is in the mid-50s. And this guy got up, a kid, an American kid, what, and he tells the Rav, Rebbe, I don't understand you. He's a reformed conservative, Mechalalei Shavuos. And this kid was throwing hail and brimstone. And the Rav, what could he say? The Rav said, you're entitled to your opinion, but I don't agree with you. That's what the Rav responded. And Yitzchak knows how many times you could hear that from the Rav. I have to say, that individual went on to be rabbi in a conservative shul for many, many decades. And to the best of my knowledge, he never put a mechitzer in. If anyone knows who I'm talking about and he did put a mechitzer in, please inform me. But in Chaim Berlin, in a million years, you couldn't pay that. The Rav, I always tell you, with the sitting, with the Rav gave a Meiridik Shir, it's the first Shir in Halacha that I understood thoroughly. It was 1955, I believe, 54. I was a kid, but I had a good mind then. And the Rav gave a Meiridik Shir on Einel Simitzvot Chavilot Chavilot, and he dealt with Kiddush V'Havdalah and developed until today. I leave a tablecloth on from Shabbos. I only take it off after Havdalah. The Havdalah turns the Suda from a Sudat Kedusha into a Sudat Chol. And that's why the Rav felt you have to sit for Havdalah. There's a din in Mamish ending the Suda, ending the Sudat Shabbat. And I'll never forget when the Rebbe, we criticized him, Rebbe, you're never in the yeshiva. And the Rebbe said, what's normal for me? They have to look at me when I'm davening. What do you want out of me? No, Rebbe, we want to see him. And so finally he agreed, he spent the Shabbos in the yeshiva. Hundreds of kids walked over from Manhattan, from the Bronx. Oh, what went on? And then we davened Mariv, the Rebbe spoke, we davened Mariv. And the Reis was the Gabbai, and Reis goes over to the Rav. I believe his name is Yisrael Reis, and he goes over to the Rav. Rebbe, Mivlach, Mechabed Zayin, Machen, Funz, Havdal, we'd like you to make Havdal. All right, and they bring over the coast, and everyone's down. And the Rav say, oh, we can't win them side. How do you know the secret of sitting down? And he said, Rebbe, you just gave the outside shir 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. We heard the shir. So you see, what that reveals is the Rav never expected everyone to follow him. He gave a shir, Lundas, but to say to do what your father does, who am I to tell you what to do? That couldn't happen in Chaim Berlin. Do you understand the difference? The Chaim Berlin. Now, this will explain to you what happened at the end.
It means the Rav did not make a cult of
All right, you can call it a cult. I'd rather call it Chassidus. I don't want to be overly critical. It's hard for me to be critical. He's a Gadol Yisrael. Look, they did a lot of good. Yitzchak, they did a lot of good. I wish I could say, all right, maybe I did a little good in my life, but just Gadol Yisrael, you have to understand. The story with Shlomo, a little better, Vic, a little bit more honest now, a little less... No, be honest. You have the Yichus. A little less art scroll. Okay. The story with Shlomo LeKalbach is a very serious story. See, that story, until today, the old-time Chaim Berliners, either they stick you with a knife when they say to you, "Nu, Reb Moshe Feinstein," or they walk away, they don't want to talk about it. Here it's obvious. Shlomo LeKalbach, there you can Google him. He was born in 1925 in Hamburg, Germany. Should live and be well. A cousin, first cousin to the dancing rabbi.
One second, I think, just from a pedagogical point of view, we shouldn't call him Shlomo Kalbach. Call him about Shlomo Kalbach.
We're very distinguished. Rav Shlomo Kalbach, he's a beloved individual. Rav Shlomo Kalbach, he was beloved. His sichot, his Pashat HaShavua, and he published, you can find, Maskil Shlomo on the Chumash, and they say he was a Talmud loyal to Rav Hutna, but he gained his own reputation. And what happened was, Rav Hutna made the decision that Rabbi Shechter will succeed him as Rosh Yeshiva. Obviously, he felt that the personality of Rav Kalbach was infringing upon anyone he would appoint. He was, let's put it this way, he would make Rav Shechter the son, but this was a strong moon in the yeshiva. And this is why the words that were so stark and so strong and evidently are true, because everyone quotes them, he said to Rav Kalbach, if you want to remain in the yeshiva, you have to be an Eved Kanani to Rav Shechter and to my son-in-law. Now, I want to correct myself. One mistake I made last week, I'm surprised no one corrected me, but I said Rabbi Kalbach's daughter is very famous. I used the name Hadassah Kalbach. I realized why I said Hadassah Kalbach, because Malka and I were very friendly with Hadassah Kalbach, the wife of Reb Eliachayim Kalbach. He rabbinated in Hillside. That was Shlomo, the dancing rabbi's twin brother. You follow? And we rabbinated together. We were very close. And so I automatically said Hadassah. His eldest daughter is Professor Elisheva Kalbach, who is the Salo Whitmayer Baron Professor of Jewish History, Culture, and Society at Columbia University. His sister, this is Rabbi Kalbach's senior sister, Shlomo Kalbach, is Professor Dr. Miriam Gillis Kalbach, who heads the Joseph Koch Institute of the Bar-Ilan University. So you see, these are... what a prominent family, what a capable family, what a learned family, what a family of achievers. And Rabbi Kalbach was out. He turned to the Agudas Rabbanim, turned to Rav Moshe, and they said a hazmana, sent a hazmana ledin, which Rabbi Hutna never, ever responded to. Now, this remains a pus pimple when you speak about the history of Chaim Berlin and this particular period. I have to tell you, the theory that I mentioned to you last week, which abounds in the internet, seems may very, very well be correct. That Rabbi Hutna had moved so much towards Satmar that he lost regard for Reb Moshe. the AID question was critical, and in the eyes of the Satmar Ruv, Reb Moshe was Mati Mamzeret. He considered a study what Rakefet published in the third volume of Rakefet Aharon. So he considered Mamzeret. And evidently Rav Huttner agreed with the Satmar Ruv. And there's a story here, it's in the public domain, I don't know whether it's true or not, but they tell a story that at some convention, Rav Huttner was sitting with Rav Ruderman of Baltimore, and Rav Moshe suddenly came in and was walking to their table, and Rav Ruderman wanted to stand up. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Gadol Hador, and Rabbi Huttner blocked him with his foot, banged on him, shouldn't stand up. If that story is true, it proves the thesis, 100%. Let me just go one step further. There's another story here, which I doubt. But you see, it says here, you'll see a whole long edition, a whole long description, who became Reb Moshe's bodyguard, his grandson, Reb Mordechai Tendler. I just had that shaila this morning. People grow older. They need help. It's very hard for a person who is independent all his life to know they need help. It's a reality of life. When I have to lift up something heavy, my wife now is fixing a leg on a on some table. My grandson helps us. He turned it over, and we told him we'll call him when we need him to help lift it up. It's easy if children or grandchildren help you. Because a normal person understands that. Your parents did for you when you couldn't walk and you couldn't do anything. You know, the Gemara in Kedushin, Tana Rabbanu, Mahu Kibbut Abiyayim, Mashkehu, Machilo, it covers you, dresses you. No, you do that for a baby. An old person, Kibbut Abiyayim, is returning the deed that your parents did for you when you were an infant. You do it for them within on in years. So, Reb Moshe, by the late 60s, early 70s already, Reb Mordechai Tendler was the grandson who devoted his life to his grandfather. So you should see here that Rav Huttner already saw, look who's helping Reb Moshe, Mordechai Tendler, and you all know what happened afterwards with Mordechai Tendler. And by the way, he was never proven guilty. There was never a trial. There's no law in New York that taking advantage of someone means your position. When something is consensual, it's consensual. I don't want to spell it out. He was never proven guilty. So I have no idea. Yes, there were issues, there were RCA, and you all know what was involved, and his shul. But to say that Rav Huttner already knew this about Mordechai Tendler in the 70s, is reconstructing history. It's an anachronism, you see. It's like talking, he knew what would happen. What are you talking about? In the 1970s, there were no accusations and no charges against Reb Mordechai Tendler. He was married to a granddaughter of Avram Yafin, if I'm not mistaken, and the granddaughter of the Nevadika Rosh Yeshiva, and a fine family man with fine yichus, devoted to his grandfather. But they're suddenly saying that the reason that Rav Huttner had no regard for Reb Moshe, that the Mordechai Tendler factor, the Mordechai Tendler factor becomes a factor, I don't know, the 1990s, 2000. What does that have to do with 1970? So this remains an open question. It's a boil with pus that doesn't go away. It can't go away. Because here we're teaching Kavara Torah, here we're teaching Gedolei Yisrael, here we're teaching respect, here we're teaching Das Teira, here the whole Aguda world, Das Teira, Moetzet Gedolei Torah, and Rav Huttner refused the Hasmana Ladin of Reb Moshe Feinstein. I don't have an answer. the machloket remains until today. Reb Shlomo Kabach should live and be well. I understand he went on to give many shiurim afterwards, but elsewhere. Mainly got involved, I'm told, with teaching women on a very high level, Beis Yaakov graduates, published a lot of svarim. He's held in high regard. Chaim Berlin goes on, tremendous institution, Reb Aaron Schechter, very successful. Once again, the late sonim or those involved in the machloket will say, will prove to you that Reb Moshe and Reb Chutna didn't get along because Reb Aaron Schechter only was appointed a member of Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah after Reb Moshe died. Who can prove this? Who can go back? What does it have to do with this machloket? But all right, once machloket develops, there is the core of the machloket and everything that grows up around it. Most of it, as Vic said, polis, as I say, but in reality, it's very distant from l'shem shemayim. Adkan. Yes, Mori.
Is there any evidence that there was this animosity before there was this saf of the Besdin, or is that just afterwards and it was a justification?
No. In those whispering evidently knew, but the world had no idea. When he never responded to the tzav, even a guy named Aaron Rakefet living in Yerushalayim, light years away from Brooklyn, I heard about it here. You follow? Bishat Maisa, I heard about it here.
No, the question is, was that just used as a justification for not showing up? Was it inherently a problem?
No, you're asking a good question. I can't answer. My guess is that if it's true that he had become so much of a Satma devotee that this issue of AID could very well be, because he's Mati Mamzeva, just think what I'm saying. Look, the Rav didn't know how to paskin. I didn't make it up. I'm quoting the Rav word by word. You can hear it on. He didn't know how to paskin. The Rav said, I don't know what to paskin. I don't know myself what to paskin. I think ultimately he was Matir, but I'm only guessing. Rav Shlomo Zalman was Matir. Rav Moshe is Matir. Adultery is a sexual act. You can't become a mamza from a test tube. You follow? The Satma Rav said, Zera, if semen of a different man goes into a woman's womb, that child is a mamza. Follow? Zera, the word in the Torah. Big machleket ha-paiskim. All right, today, lahalacha, you all know, Ilo Aleinu, I have students, female students, you know, who had the Hazraha Malachutit. They go to Germany, want to avoid the problem of a brother and sister marrying. They're not simple problems. This is sakanat nefesh, pikuach nefesh in the full sense of the word. And part of it goes back to the feminist problem. We've taken the woman out of the kitchen. We've educated her. She wants a career. All my granddaughters-in-law, every last one has a degree. Many are getting advanced degrees. I'm going to have many granddaughters with PhDs. Okay? PhDs. We initialize them. It's a real problem. Where do you have time for kids? Where do you have time for marriage? Then you suddenly wake up, I want to have a kid. It's very sad. And I'll tell you something else. School is very important. We don't go to school to learn. School teaches you nothing. School teaches you how to be a mensch, how to get along with your classmates. 99% of the knowledge I've gained in my life, I did it on my own. School gave me direction, that's all. But I can tell you, I'm very opposed to skipping kids because their role in school, learn how to get along with your classmates. You're too bright, learn how a bright person gets along with average people. I know kids, I don't want to mention the name, though it's well known and she's published and she's not ashamed. She's a classmate of my daughter's. She was 2 years younger. She was skipped twice, a brilliant mother, a brilliant father. She never married. The social grace was lacking. It's a Rachmanes. She has 3 children today, but all by AID. She wrote a whole tshuva l'halacha. She's a lamdanit. You see, this is a delicate problem. And this is what I spoke about yesterday. You don't realize the miracle going on in the state of Israel. Everyone, Yom HaTzmut came, went, Yom Yerushalayim will come. Why do we thank the Ribbono Shel Olam, the miracles we have here? Well, first of all, if you've lived here long enough, you understand how this country runs with its leadership, with its Supreme Court. There's no radio now, there's no this, there's no that. The Supreme Court, Mishtzei Harayin and Alts, not elected, not appointed, don't represent the people. They're running the country. You can't breathe there without permission from the Supreme Court. And then some of them are Amayar, it's the Oraita. It's beyond words. I used to think Supreme Court, I've seen some of their rulings. Oh my gosh, I can write it. Forget it. But there's another miracle here we have to thank God. The greatest preachers in the country. Tell me, whoever heard of Rav Kaffin? Whoever heard of Rabbi Miller, David Miller? Whoever heard of Rabbi Asaf Bednas? No one ever. Whoever preached, Rabbi Lichtenstein? How could he? Was a preacher? Absolutely not. The greatest preachers are women. Are you aware of it today? One after another. And it began in the Haredi world. Batsheva Kanyevsky, unbelievable. Reb Chaim's wife, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, the daughter of Ravel Yashiv. And when she died, Reb Chaim appointed a successor. One daughter, he said, you have the wife's ability. She's the successor today. And right down the line, Rahav Meir, what a speaker. 500 people every week. Heichal Shlomo. I spoke here on Yerushalayim. I attracted 30 people, 40 people maybe. 500 people. Rabbi Berman, the next president, spoke at night, 25 people. What are we talking about? The Breslava, I told you about how many times. Yemima Mizrahi, she was my daughter's classmate, but she's fabulous. She speaks, she introduced, she's a genius, you know, she's a lawyer, she's a Tohenet, her English is fabulous, a genius, a Lamdanit. So she introduced new words into the Hebrew language. Style, shopping. She speaks to the woman, remain a woman. Don't lose your femininity. And what do they do? What's the high point of all their preaching? Hundreds of women come together. Hafrashat Chala. Help me out. Hafrashat Chala. It's unbelievable. Three mitzvot of women. Chala is kashrut. Nida, Tarat Mishpacha. Hadlakat Neirat Shabbos. That's what they talk about. And hundreds of women thought of this. To turn Hafrashat Chala into Tachas Simcha. We have a miracle here in the state of Israel. Women, here in America, they're killing each other. Rabbi, title, not rabbi, yes, rabbi. In Israel, the women are leading us, preaching. And they're remaining women. They don't want to be men. That's the gutlet. This is not Riverdale. This is Eretz Israel. Kedushat Haaretz. Avir Diara, Machkima. And I can go on and on. There's so much material today to talk about. And each woman is different. Some are total Haredi'ot. Some are Haredi'ot. Chardaliot. That would describe Yaron. What's the name today? Yaron Dayan. Noah Yaron Dayan. A TV personality. I told the class yesterday. How she finds God. It's unbelievable, the story I told yesterday. It's in her book. And some of them are from the Tzioni Dati world. That already is Rahab Meir. Also, I understand the Balat Sheva, but a genius. They say already at 17 that she was something big. So we have miracles here. We have to be thankful to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay. Let me go a drop further. Let's send off talking about the man as a Rosh Yeshiva, as a focal image, there was a certain depth to this man that even in simple actions he saw way beyond the average person. And here's one of the most beautiful stories I came across. And it talks about Rav Futner is going to visit someone. He has a Talmud Ishamas accompanying him, and they order a taxi. The taxi comes, Coney Island Avenue, crowded, many cars, and upon entering the taxi, the Talmud holds the door for Rav Futner, and Rav Futner sits down, and then the Talmud enters, sits down next to the Rosh Yeshiva, tells the taxi driver their destination. Taxi driver doesn't start driving. He turns around and he looks at his passengers, the venerable Rosh Yeshiva, the Talmud, their garb, and before he starts driving, goes to the glove compartment, takes out a cap, and puts a cap on his head. So Rav Futner turns to his Talmud and he says, for this act of kavod, who knows how much Olam Haba the driver will get. And the Talmud looks at the Rebbe, such a small gesture merits a reward in eternity? Yes, indeed, Rabbi Hupner says. And he says, let me tell you a story. And he tells the story about the Chidush Erim, Yitzchak Meir Alter Rotenberg. That's the founder of Ger Chassidus, Talmud of the Kotzka. Again, I can't go into details. I mentioned names on the Kotzka. I could talk for hours. The Kotzka, very fascinating. He couldn't handle Hamon Ha'am. Give me 10 Chassidim who understand me. That's all I want. And he was amazing. When he died, his Chassidus split into three. Some went to his son. Some went to the Sach Tshava, who was a Talmud, Rav Avram Bornstein, okay, the Gleital. And some went to the Chidush Erim, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in the Kotzky Yeshiva. So Rav Yitzchak Meir every morning went to the mikveh. And he would walk to the mikveh. And there was a shortcut he could take from where he lived to the mikveh. It would take 5 minutes. But instead he walked through the main street, and it literally added 10 minutes to the walk. It was going out, walking up the main street, and then turning back to go to the mikveh. No, chassidim, the Rebbe gates the mikveh, chassidim dafen begleiten the Rebbe, they have to accompany the Rebbe. So the chassidim asked Rebbe, why do you take this roundabout way? It adds another 10-12 minutes to your walk. And the Rebbe looked at them and said, don't you see what happens? If I would go directly to the mikveh from my house, I'd be there 1, 2, 3. I go on the main street. We pass the area, and the Rebbe always used to describe this, where the porters are waiting. A lot of Jews, they didn't have education. What could they do for panasa? They were vasatrega. They would carry water on their backs. They would carry tables. Anyone who needed help with something heavy, they knew where to find the porters, and they would engage them and give them a few zlatas, a few rubles. He says, look what happens. When we approach the area where the porters are standing, the Rebbe is coming. One of the porters calls out, look sharp, the Rebbe is coming. And the porters immediately stop what they're doing silence now reigned over the station. The porters straightened their caps and jackets. All eyes turned to the Chidushei Arim, who was now approaching the group. As the Rebbe walked past the workers, the men slightly bent their heads down with to show respect. The porters remained standing silently in this position until the Rebbe had walked a small distance past them. Look what the Rebbe accomplished. He gave simple porters a chance to show Kavod HaTorah. Can't put a price on it. This is beautiful. If nothing else, this is beautiful. This is what Yiddishkeit is about. This is what we spoke about yesterday. If you're not Mishamish Tomidei Chachamim, you don't know what Yiddishkeit is.
What? You could be an Amoris, you could be a
Shabbat. So we said yesterday. Thank you. You said it was a good shiur yesterday. It was a good shiur. It was good. It was good. It had depth, meaning, and emotion. That's what I love about Rabbi Menashe Klein. It's not cold halacha. There's a Hasidish Warmkeit in his tshuva. Do you follow me? I love it.
And the truth is, those who want to make the goal into a coffin, it's not good. They missed the rope too.
Right. They don't know who the rope was.
They don't know who he was.
Correct.
He was not a coffin. It's very simple to say it that way. You know, black is black and white.
When he spoke to a big audience, he opened his whole heart. It was amazing.
But also in Boston, he knew about people. He cared.
No two ways about it. Baruch HaTorah Adonai Melech Olam Shekhon Yadidol. Gentlemen, I'm now going to hit a home run, or I'm going to strike out. There's no one in this room who can tell me. I have to hear if there are any close Talmidim of Rav Huttner listening. I'd like to hear their reaction. You only knew Rav Huttner as a youngster, so you can't really react to this. In life, the greatest blessing is children. And none of us, you know, you can get married and you have children, you can't have children. It's nishta pashat azach. The State of Israel, of course, is among the leading country in the world in helping couples that appear to be infertile to achieve fertility. Rav Huttner had one single child. It's interesting. Sterility is not inherited, they say, and it's interesting he had one and his single child has none. So there is something to it. And also in Chabad, along the line, there's a period where they couldn't have children. You can check it out. That one child, there were problems. You see, with the Rebbe couldn't have children. The others in the family. He has a brilliant daughter, Bruria, basically my age, Yitzchak's age. She was a classmate of my wife. They had some classes together in Hunter College. She marries Rabbi David, who we spoke about, who is appointed as the titular Ko-Rosh Yeshiva today, Rabbi Yonatan David. He's basically at Pachad Yitzchak, but he goes back to New York twice a year. And Rebbetzin Bruria David inherited her father's brilliance, tremendous amount of knowledge, a superb lamdanit, a world of knowledge beyond it. Believe it or not, the Rosh Yeshiva's daughter achieved a doctorate, not like Rakefet from Bernard Rebel Graduate School. I don't want to put Bernard Rebel Graduate School down because they're the only part of YU that acknowledges my existence. But still, Columbia University, you tell people you have a doctorate from Columbia, it's practically like saying a doctorate from Harvard. She did her doctorate under Selah Baron. Now, her doctorate, entitled The Dual Role of Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Chayot, Traditionalist and Maskev. I have a printout of her doctorate in my office, right down the hall from here. What a doctorate. What brilliance. Who is her Tzvi Chaya? Did you hear my lectures about 20, 25 years ago in this very kollel? Reb Tzvi Hirschayat. Reb Tzvi Hirschayat, 19th century. One of the greatest Rabbanim, one of the greatest Lamdanim. You've all seen his work, Mavol LeTanach, Mavol LeNach, Mavol LeTalmud, Student's Guide through the Talmud, Shalat and Shuvat. The man knew everything. In addition, a great deal of secular knowledge. Who was he? Was he in the mold of the Chatam Sofer, the Noda B'Yehuda? Or was he already someone who had absorbed from the Haskalah into his soul and was also very close to Shmuel David Lutzato, to Shir Rappaport, to Rab Nachman Krachmal? I've mentioned three names of three giants in Torah and in Chochmat Yisrael of this period. Three giants. Who was Rav Tzvi Hirschayat? Gentlemen, in Bruce's opinion, and I believe she proves it conclusively, he was caught in conflict. On one hand, he couldn't leave the traditional world. Torah is Torah. Mesorah is Mesorah. The Chatam Sofer is the Chatam Sofer. The Nod Yehuda is the Nod of Yehuda. But he had tasted the waters of the modern world, the scientific world. And he appreciated Shadal, Ranak, Shir Rappaport. You know who he was? The son-in-law of the Ketzot HaChoshen, of the Avni Meluah. That was his father-in-law. The Rav used to joke, I have it in my work on the Rav, quoting him word by word, that he helped his father-in-law write the Avni Meluim. That was on Eben Ezra. And the Choshen Mishpat is, of course, the classic work on Choshen Mishpat, the Ketzot HaChoshen. And the Rav said, "Nach the Avni Meluim kommt nicht zu der Choshen." It doesn't equal the Ketzot HaChoshen, because his son-in-law, the Maskil, helped him. It didn't achieve the level of the Ketzot HaChoshen. Who was Reb Tzvi Hirschayat? Gentlemen, I believe, consciously or subconsciously, she wrote about Reb Tzvi Hirschayat because she was writing about her father. Who was Reb Yitzchak Hutner? Who was he? Talmud of Rav Kook. Poet in beautiful modern Hebrew. Tremendous lover of Eretz Yisrael. Couldn't bring himself to leave, always wanted to come back. Evidently took what happened with the hijacking, where he was hijacked with his daughter and son-in-law. A sign from God, you belong in Yerushalayim. Who was he? Disciple of the Satma Rav? There wasn't a greater Kanoi in his generation than the Satma Rav. Anti-Zionist. Anti-Jewish agency who saved him. Extremist in halacha. Wow. Disciple, lover, follower. Gave up dreams and visions because Rabbi Aaron Cutler opposed them. How can you argue with Rabbi Aaron Cutler? Could criticize Mori Urebi, Rav Soloveitchik. You all know my famous debate with Rav David Cohn. And I told the story. I mean, it's classic. It's on YU Torah. It's recorded, and he's recorded. When he listens to me, And he, and then they record him responding at it. You have it right there, Eitat Nemana, when I told the class with the famous hesped the Rav gave for Rav Elvel. So Rav David Cohn stood up and yelled at the Rav, Mevazik Eben the Briska Rav. I don't want to repeat it all now. You embarrassed my uncle, you embarrassed the Briska Rav, your uncle. Oh, wow. Oh, you Mevazik, excuse me, the Chazon Ish. That you said, the Briska Rav, the Rav, whatever the Rav said was later published word by word by Mela in the Haredi world. So you know what I'm talking about, right? Or you don't know, you're looking at me cross-eyed. I'm watching the clock, but forget about the clock. The Rav gave a hesped for Rav Velvel. And in the hesped he said, mein feta hat no fashtan in Teira. In Rav Velvel's world, it's privilege, there was only Torah. He couldn't deal with anything that was in Torah. Politics, anything beyond my uncle. For Haraya, I'll bring you a proof that when Ben-Gurion wanted to see the Briska Rav refused to see him. Unlike the Chazon Ish, who was astute enough and was able to receive Ben-Gurion. And you all know the famous story with the donkey, with the burden. It's classic. So David Cohn gets up and yells at that Mori Rebbe in front of 2,000 people, who's Mavazig then the Chazon Ish, you embarrassed the Chazon Ish. Well, David Hartman jumped on him, the Rebbetzin yelled from upstairs, take him out, you know, a wife can, the Rav was, it was the day or two before, the world didn't know he was going to have a serious operation where the statistics showed he would not survive. The famous cancer operation when methods were still primitive, but cancer still kills today. Oh, what an incident. I could still hear the Rebbetzin's voice. Take him out, take him out. David Hartman jumped on him. Oh, wow. They were friends from Chaim Berlin, but they were going two different ways already. So I told the class that a rumor spread throughout the yeshiva that David Cohn had walked out before and came back in. And they say there was a phone booth right, I don't know, still there, but as we recall the yeshiva, right around Lamport Auditorium on the side, there were phones. They say that David Cohn called Rav Hutner, and Rav Hutner told him what to do. And I said, but it's only a rumor. We could never substantiate it. So David Cohn says, what is Rabbi Rakefet talking about? I went into a phone booth, I put on the Superman uniform, I took off the Superman. Yes, but it is true. Rabbi Hutner called me the next moment and gave me a Yasha Kayach. So we were hysterical, you follow? Imagine the rumor, you're right, so, but it shows you the rumor was based upon reality. And it shows you where Rabbi Hutner stood already in 1959-60, that here this Talmud of Rav Kook is maledicting Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Who is the real Rav Hutner? Stand up. The real Rav Hutner? Rav Tzvi Hirsch. She is writing a doctorate about a personality who totally resembles her father. His inner struggle, the inner dynamics, the pull. Truth here, truth here. Where do I stand? Who am I? And she's brilliant in her exposition. Am I right or wrong? Did I hit a home run or did I strike out? No one here can answer that.
This is like a psycho on that.
Yeah, correct, correct.
There is a fellow by the name of Eric who wrote about Luther and did the same thing.
All right, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Shekimati, not to Luther, but to Erickson. But, gentlemen, doesn't end here. You should know. In scholarship, there is never unanimity. All we historians are doing is trying to predict the past. Don't ever say when you come up with a chiddush in history, I'm 99% sure, say 90, 80, 70. Professor Joshua Finkel, Zichrono Levracha, taught me that in graduate school. Be humble. One of the latest traditions, fall 2016. You can't believe it. An article by Rabbi Dr. Moshe Miller teaches Judaic studies and Jewish history at two New York campuses of Touro College. And it's a review essay in tradition. A book just came out, The Middle Way, by Ephraim Chamiel, Chamiel, Brighton Academic Studies Press, 2014. And he deals in this book, he proposes to analyze the responses of three 19th century rabbi scholars to six core issues pertaining to modernity. The rabbi scholars are Tzvi Hishkayet of Galicia, Shems Rafal Hirsch of Germany, Shmuel David Litzato of Italy. And then he goes on to the six issues. And gentlemen, in this article, he takes total issue with Breuer David. And he feels that Chamiel, in his volume, is absolutely right. That Breuer David overstates the case. Unpublished doctoral dissertation. The way she describes him, caught between two worlds, stuttering, thinking, which way to go. Chamiel feels Reb Tzvi Hirschhayot was a total right-winger. Modern language, total Haredi, and that Breuer's doctorate overstates the case in trying to show there was modernity in him as well. And you have to read the review, obviously, if you're interested. It's worth getting the book and seeing the clash. Who was Reb Tzvi Hirschhayot? And Chamiel? Total. Like the Chatam Sofer. Like the Noda B'Yehuda. All right, he lived in the 19th century. There was modernity around him. But as a Rav, as a Posek, as a Baal Machshava, and he brings examples, he was totally within the old traditional world. And I respond to this critique of Breuer David, you're missing the point. Breuer David is also writing about her father. And no one but man can say he was totally traditional, totally in the old world. Rav Kook, innovative Pachat Yitzchak, America, the Satmaruv, Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. What a life, what a story. How did he arrive in America? Short clothes, beardless, spoke English at the end of the year fluently. A man caught between two worlds, the Rav Huttner of the 30s, the 40s, the Rav Huttner of the 60s, the 70s, Reb Tzvi Hirschhayot. Breuer David may very well be wrong in regarding Reb Tzvi Hirschhayot, but she certainly is right when it comes to her father. And finally, I want to strengthen my thesis.
Just one second. Who was the third rabbi,
Tzvi Hirschhayot? The three rabbis that he dealt with, Reb Tzvi Hirschhayot, Reb Shmuel Rafal Hirsch, and Reb Shmuel David Litzato. Right, let me just check. Yeah. Three rabbanim caught between tradition and modernity. And he shows that the Tzvi Hirschhayot, in his opinion, totally traditional, and he takes issue and critiques the thesis of Ruria Dubin. And it's interesting, it was never published, because she's living in a right-wing world, Beis Yaakov, Pachad Yitzchak, she, her husband, the succession to her father, a doctorate like that can't be published. You follow? And again, I say to you, Art Scroll has published many biographies. The two that are missing are Rav Aaron Kotler and Rav Yitzchak Kotler. They can't deal with it. It's not the world of YU, of scholarship, of intellectual honesty. It's the world, as Ellis of Germany, Zichrono Livracha, said, it's not what happened that's important, not the facts, but what we want the children to believe, to be inspired by. We're dealing here with two different worlds.
Is there a possibility to have a different view that he changed? He started one way, and then...
Well, no, of course he changed, but this is a constant going struggle. You understand?
Life when he was a satma disciple.
No, but he never was a total satma. He never was a total disciple of Rav Aaron Kotler. You see, he was caught in quicksand, in a quagmire. And there were parts of him that were totally innovative, the Maral, the Pachad Yitzchak, what he got from Rav Kook, and yet he had to submit himself to the tradition, to the right wing. You see, the man, this is the way she describes it, Tzvi Hirschhayim. You have to study the doctorate. It's online. I don't know, you can download it. Many people tell me they've downloaded it. See what you come up with. If you go to Google, Ruria Dubin, see what you come up with. I think I saw it that it's you can download it.
I just downloaded.
You downloaded the doctorate?
478 pages.
That's it. So show it to Yitz afterwards. Let him download it and he can entertain himself with the struggle. It's a fabulous doctorate.
I mean, like, for example,
let me end off.
The same view about the Samson Bayfield, that he really wasn't in the...
No, Samson Fall here, you cannot say he was totally traditional, no matter which way you turn it. He already was innovative, and it was a new Torah, neo-orthodoxy. You can't do it with Rav Hirsch. Actually, what he shows is, Rav Hirschkayas was to the right, Hirsch in the middle, Shadala on the left. You follow? But you got to read it. There's a lot of scholarship there. I want to end off, and I want to thank... I'm going to say something. I'm going to give you another source now. But I want to thank... A year ago, my Talmud, Jesse Sonnenblit, said to me, my devotees in Shari Tfilah of Rabbi Rachman today in Lawrence would like to hear a talk on Rav Yitzchak Kotler. So I said, all right, I'll do my research, but I didn't, you know, I knew him from, ken him from the Vitans. So I did my research, and I gave a 40-50 minute talk there, and I saw they loved it. And I was enthralled already by Rav Kotler. So the 40-50 minute talk turned into a whole year of lectures on Rav Kotler. Kanein hara. Gentlemen, I'm going to prove to you I'm right again. There was one other personality on the modern Torah scene. He didn't have the same influence as Rav Kotler because he didn't wish to. He may have been one of the greatest gedolim that we had after pre-World War II in the United States and later in Israel. And I'm talking about Rabbi Yisrael Zev Gustman, the Rosh Yeshiva of Netzach Yisrael. He's 1908, 1991, and it just... was an individual beyond description, a gon, absolutely a gon, adir, kol ha-Torah kula, word by word by heart, was on the Beit Din, Reb Chaim Moisek Rezhinsky, succeeded his father-in-law, Reb Meir Reb Besson. I think he was 24 years old when he succeeded his father, Reb Chaim Moisek Beis Din. He already was the Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshivat Ramelis in Vilna. Then Hitler came and he went through all the sorrow, torture of the Holocaust. His only son killed before his, God, what these people went through. He survived, was never the same again. Taught in Lubavitch, Rosh Yeshiva, then reestablished Ramelis Yeshiva, and then came in Aliyah. The stories are legendary about him. And he's the one that, when there were parades here on Yom HaTzmut, yet in my time when I came in Aliyah, he would go to the parade and the critics would say to him, how can the Rosh Yeshiva waste time with this Rebbetzin? And I saw them at the parade when I attended in 69, 70, 71. And how can the Rosh Yeshiva waste time at the parades? And he responded very sharply and very strongly, we who saw Jewish children killed before our eyes are rejoicing to see Jewish children marching in dignity, quote, end quote. And at the Shiva for Rav Huttner, he, first of all, had tremendous regard for Bruria David and Rav Gusman, who was a Gadol Sheba Gedolim, said about her, she is a great Talmida Chachama in the full sense of the word. And when he came, Lenachim Avol, he repeated that Rav Huttner constantly would say to Rav Gusman, you're the only one who understands me. You understand what I'm just said to you? Rav Gusman too was iconoclastic. Could never fit into the right-wing world, and yet could never carry the banner of Yeshiva University. When Panovich offered him to be Rosh Yeshiva, turned him down on the spot, the Chlunish the Kovad and the Chlunish the Akmas Nefesh. And a small yeshiva in Rechavia gave a shir for the students, gave a shir for Balabatim, gave a shir in Yiddish, gave a shir in Hebrew. What an individual. Lamdin Mufak, product of Europe, Reb Chaim Moisek Gazhensky, Vilna. But someone who loved the flag of the State of Israel. When Professor Shlomo Omen sat Shiva for his son, 1982, it's legendary but absolutely true. I published it in Washington with the source, people who were there, their own ears heard it. Reb Yisrael Gottesman came, Lenachem Gusman, I keep on saying Gottesman, Yisrael Zev Gusman, G-U-S-T-M-A-N, came Lenachem Avol, and he said, Professor Orman, who was his Talmud, came to the Balabatim Shir, I envy you. And he looked at him. Father is sitting Shiva for a son killed in battle. I envy you. And he said, I lost my son. We couldn't fight back. Murdered by the Nazis, brutally. Your son died dignity in the clothes of Tzva Hagana Yisrael, protecting the land of Israel, the Jewish people. I envy you. Need I say more? Rav Gusman was absolutely right. Rav Huttner would always say to me, you are the only one who understands me. Adkan, gentlemen, Adkan Rav Huttner. I think today's lecture was extremely important, and I want to be thankful to Vic that he caused me and encouraged me to revisit and restate the final incident. That issue has not been resolved. It will never be resolved. And it hangs fire. If we preach fidelity to Halacha, and we laugh at a Zimun from a Gadol b'Yisrael and don't respond, it's a tremendous question. Unfortunately, this is not the only case. There are other cases where Rabbonim did not respond. But this is the case that Chaim Berlin, it was a breach. A breach. Rav Kalbach went his way. By the way, Rav Avigdor Miller also left rumors, different versions until today, but Bishop Meissen, I heard it was his personality was becoming too big, and in a yeshiva that is dominated by a Rosh Yeshiva who's a semi-Hasidic Rebbe, there was no place for him anymore. That's what I remember hearing as a kid at the time, a young man at the time. But this was Rav Avigdor's personality, and we have to accept it with the greatness. But on the other hand, Rakefet built nothing. What did he build in his life? Ganesh McGonish, named the yeshiva that he built, hid behind the desk, and happy just to teach Torah Hashem to Mima. Rav Avigdor built a tremendous institution. Gentlemen, next week there are no classes, but the week afterwards are the final two lectures. And on Monday, it's $99,000 linked to the shekel on the IOU list to get in. I will attempt to explain to you why YU never shifted from its original status in the 50s and 60s. Unlike Teira Vadas, Chaim Lin, why you remain static? And I will attempt to analyze who Reb Shmuel Belkin was and the magic relationship that he had with the Rav. I mean, that's the story. Nothing budged. Only later, when the Rebbetzin is gone, stands start the shift. That's the 70s on. Not the 50s, not the 60s. Torah Avodas already was a different institution. Some of the Rebbeim and Torah Avodas had to run away. Why you took them in? Rabbi Belkin did chesed on top of chesed. My colleagues teaching in YU were Torah Avodas emigres. But Chaim Berlin changed? Wow. Not Yeshiva University.
You know, you would think that YU would make sure a doctorate got written of Belkin. Look how many people YU saved during World War II.
We're World War II, yeah, yeah.
All of a sudden, yeah. You couldn't get saved, but these of us who had a job. Right.
Well, that was not so much Dr. Belkin was involved, but it was mainly Rabbi Revel, but then by 41 it's all over. But what he did for the immigrants, the Grina, remember that word, Greenhorn? A Grina. Gentlemen, Vic, this is the picture. I found it. And in this picture, they identify everyone in the picture. Harav Yisrael Snow. Rav HaMachshir before 1957. What does that mean? That your uncle was involved in Hechsher? Or it means this picture had to be before 57. I would, Jerry Wolicki, it's a very interesting, here I found the picture I wanted where they identify everyone and fabulous. That's a famous picture of the baking in Streitz. If anyone is interested, this is a fabulous article about the Rebbe and about Jewish education. Where Meshulam Weiss becomes a Chabadnik, consults the Rebbe, and about his wife, who was upset to marry. She feared my temperament would make me unstable. A girl of 18, you have to see how the Rebbe calms her down. And how the gynecologist says she can't have children, her wounds are not developed. And the Rebbe told her, you will have children. And they wind up, I think, with 15 children. And when it's all over, she has an operation, an examination by another gynecologist who didn't really know her. And he says, well, it's too bad you couldn't have children because of the problem with your womb. And here's a woman, 15 children, the Rebbe's bracha. Here's another story about a fabulous about a Russian lady. I know that I've met her, and how the Rebbe encourages you must teach Russians, and what she has done, what she has accomplished. By the way, my children just got back from the Ukraine yesterday, and they describe it as so primitive, the roads, and yet there are people who came in Aliyah and went back to the Ukraine. They couldn't take it here. They couldn't adjust. The problem, Americans have it too. It's very, very sad. They came back very upset. Here's Rebbe from the letter to a family. Nissan Mendel signs the letter. It's written in English. The Rebbe, the encouragement he gives to the family, and it's just unbelievable. Here's an article in Judaism. I've seen this article many, many times. It's a very sad article. A Jew in Baruch sees another Jew, recognizes him. Were you at Auschwitz? Yes. And he accuses him that you killed my brother. And they go to Din Torah. It's a very famous story. You'll see. It's a true story. Kapo. And he was found innocent. Rabbi Rackham was on the base, and then he was replaced by a... You got to read. It's a Rabbi Leo Pfeiffer. And these names come back to memory. He was the lawyer for the American Jewish Congress, right? And he was a Frum guy. He was the son of a Rav. This is interesting. Shmuley Boteach takes a picture with one of the White House big people, Trump's, and in back is the board, where secret things are written on it, and no one erased it before the selfie. And here you can look at the picture and get all the secrets. This is one I told you yesterday, a very interesting New York Times polio vaccine pioneer, Julius Jungner. And here's someone who worked with Dr. Jonas Salk, a key member, did great things, never got any credit for what he did. It could be too that Salk had that personality, Bishvili, I'm the head man here, no one else counts. How do we judge success? Very interesting article. 50 years since the Mifza Tfilin began, before the Six-Day War, and here's a Jew from the Haaretz crowd who's very proud he put on Tfilin at the Kotel. Here are two copies of a memoir. A kid is going to Yeshiva Pressburg, and the Chassidim are killing him because they feel he is going to something like Yeshiva University. Take this copy. This has the original memoir.
Pressburg was that kind of school?
Read it. I can't believe
my
it.
Studied Pressburg.
Right, right. Here's, it was more open-minded than evidently the little Yeshiva. And here's Alan Dershowitz speaking at his high school reunion. Then I want to ask one question. Is there anyone here who has ties to the old Bronx? If anyone is from the old Bronx, I'm willing to lend them this book, which is fabulous. My Old Neighborhood Remembered, a memoir by Avery Corman. That's the author of Kramer versus Kramer. And My Old Neighborhood Remembered. There's a picture here of Concourse Center of Israel. If you come from the old Bronx, it's very fascinating. I can tell you, I was given the book a gift. I read it, Rabbi David Miller read it, Rabbi Avishai David read it. We're all part of the Bronx Mafia. My dear students, there's a class coming in shortly. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. I want to thank Yomo, who rescheduled his life in order to arrange the recording of today's shiur. Yomo, a big thank you. Tiske l'mitzvot. Das Vedanya.